As we near Thanksgiving, this unique holiday dedicated to the practice of gratitude, it's good to turn our attention to those in our society whose lives have not turned out so well. So many complicated issues, so much need. Today we look at those living on death row. We come with questions. How would Jesus have us respond to the horror of murder? Is the best way to address an evil trauma with another trauma? What does God's restorative justice look like? What about the words of Desmond Tutu? The love of God is big enough to set both the oppressed and the oppressor free. Is it true? Today I pick up my conversation from last week with Chris Hall and Shane Claiborne as they share a recent experience with some folks in a Nashville penitentiary. Unit 2, Death Row. My name is Nathan Foster, and welcome to the Renovare Weekly Podcast. Well, speaking of stepping out of comfort zones and reclaiming kingdom come in spaces, you two did something I found very interesting lately. Could you talk about that?
We got to go together to Nashville and visit some of the men in Riverbend in Unit 2. And Unit 2 is death row. And so these were is a maximum security facility. And I've been visiting some of these men for a couple of years now, and they've really, really impacted my life. So, you know, when Doc and I are having lunch, I'm talking about them, and he's like, I'd really like to go sometime. So I was speaking at Belmont, and we had them flip the bill, I think. we wrote the wave on that, and we got to go visit him, and you know, I think he understood, you know, why I had such a fire in my bones around the death penalty and you know, redemption, and you know, you really see. I told Chris when we were going in, I said one of the things that I found most surprising, maybe it shouldn't be, but it's just how normal and it feels once you're there, you know, like to be able to interact with these men and tell jokes and talk. And, you know, they made us Kool-Aid one time, you know, and they, you know, just sitting around and I mean, we're kind of conditioned, I think, to think about, death row or, you know, incarcerated people in a certain way. And there are many folks, even in that same facility, that are deeply troubled psychologically, and things like that. But we got to sit with some of our brothers and pray and talk and spend a couple hours just hanging around, hanging out together.
Mm. So Shay, when you're actually meeting with the people, how I mean, does this just feel like a normal exchange, or do they kind of, you know, see you as somebody different?
Oh, well, I think initially I was invited there because I had friends that worked as chaplains, volunteer chaplains and stuff. And so I just went in to listen and to get to know them, pray together. We sing songs. I've taken Propaganda, who's an incredible spoken word artist, you know, a musician. He came and taken Jonathan Merritt, other friends of mine in there. So Doug Padgett and I, we've gone. So I love like introducing. It's very natural, you know. And in fact, once I went there, they told me that they've written some of the authors that they read or they appreciate. And some of them don't come, but some do. And like Paul Young that wrote The Shack, he came and visited these guys. Sister Helen, Brian Stevenson, I've all been to visit these same guys, you know, in Unit 2. But when you get there, there's not much pretense, you know. I mean, so we just talk. There's not an agenda. We're not there to give lectures or even preach or anything. We just kind of hang out for a couple hours and we, you know, see where the spirit goes. But I've also began to see, like, as I visited them, the urgency around this issue. You know, when I first went there, four of the men had dates for their execution. So they're hours were limited at that point. They didn't know if they'd be alive another year, you know, and that, I mean, I just can't imagine what that's like. And I'll tell you one story. But the first time I went, I think it was the first time I'd ever been to the Riverbend. I was speaking at a conference that the governor of Tennessee, Governor Haslam, was speaking at. And so on the way out, I bumped into him. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm praying for you to do what Jesus would have you do when it comes to the death penalty in Tennessee. You know, I said, this is my home state. I love Tennessee and I think we can do better than the death penalty, you know? And so then I go to meet the guys at Unit 2 and I said, I just bumped into the governor and I talked to him and then I said, I wonder this, what would you say if you bumped into the governor? And it's quiet for a second. And then the first response is one of the young men says, we would ask him to come to our Friday worship service and worship God with us and pray with us and know us. And I actually made sure the governor knew that that's what they had said, because I think what happens with, you know, any issues, but especially with the death penalty, I think is we have so many layers of distance from it that we, most of us are unaffected by it. And we don't think about what we're doing. You know, even a governor, you know, signs a warrant, a judge gives a verdict, a jury, you know, everybody has their role that they play. And so we end up having this, you know, machinery of death that it kind of can feel like we don't have anybody that's actually making decisions on it. And because the governor is, I've kept on top of him. But I thought that response is unbelievable. I mean, here are men who have a termination date on their life, and the person who has the power to stop that, what would they say? They would say, come pray with us on Friday morning. It's an incredible, like, human response. But that's kind of what I've felt, you know, every time I've been with these men and some of them maintain their innocence. Some of them are very open about what they did, and they, you know, are clear evidence that they're different people, you know, than 20 years ago when they may have committed a crime. So each story is very different, and I've just tried to get to know them, you know, one-on-one, each of them.
Mm-hmm. How about Shane? Let people know the work that you've done and the thinking you've done about the victims, because I can hear, maybe if someone even listening has been the victim of a crime or a murder has occurred, and what's your experience in talking to people who've lost somebody and are trying to wrap the gospel around that loss? Particularly when they might know the person who's taken their son or daughter or wife, husband's life.
Yeah. Well, I mean, certainly, like, our grief for victims of violence, like, is, you know, in the forefront of our heart as we think about all these things. And it's interesting, though, because it is the victims that I've met that are some of the most powerful forces in the movement to rethink the death penalty, because many of them feel like the death penalty just mirrors the evil that was done to them. You know, I've heard some of the victims say, we want to remember the victims of murder, but without creating more violence. Mm-hmm. And the death penalty just exacerbates wounds. You know, it extends the trauma and creates a new set of victims. And some of them, like one of the guys that I admire so much, Bud Welch. He's a deeply committed man of faith, and his daughter was killed in the Oklahoma City bombing. And he said immediately, I mean, instinctively, he wanted Timothy McVeigh to fry. You know, he said, I would have killed him myself if I could. And then, you know, the Spirit really started to work on him. He thought about his daughter, who was passionately against death penalty. He thought about, and he was watching the news. It was really when he saw Timothy McVeigh's dad on TV, and his dad was weeping. And he said, I felt like I was looking in the mirror. Those are tears of a father. Oh. And he said, I reached out to Timothy McVeigh's dad, and he said, I went and met him, and they held each other as they cried. And he said, I've never felt closer to God than in that moment. And they became just partners through this journey of recovery. And I mean, and Bud obviously became one very outspoken against the execution of Timothy McVeigh. But there's so many other, you know, stories of that. Suzanne Bossler, who's become a really good friend of mine. She, her dad was a pastor who was brutally murdered, and Suzanne was almost killed in that. She was stabbed in the head multiple times, and she, when it came to the trial, though, she said, there was never a moment where I wanted the death penalty, or my father would have never wanted the death penalty. So she went in court, and they told her that if she gave her opinion on the death penalty, she could be charged for contempt of court and obstruction of justice.
What?
Because they even threatened to put her in jail and fine her because it didn't fit the narrative, you know? And that's what one of the things I learned with the death penalty is we have a certain narrative of around victims. And when they're for the death penalty, we amplify their voice. But when they're against the death penalty, we really kind of marginalize them, and it doesn't fit that narrative of we should kill or we want justice for the victim. And what we mean by that is we want an execution. And so I think that there's so many groups like Journey of Hope that brings together incredible groups that bring together victims of murder, their family members, and the family members of those who are on death row and those who are facing execution. And it's a powerful thing. I mean, just 2 weeks ago, I was with someone who her dad was executed in the string of executions in Arkansas. And one of the last things that she did was share communion with the family of the victim, who also voiced that they were against the execution, but they shared communion as her dad was executed in Arkansas. I think those are just, I mean, there's these stories move me, but they go to really the heart of the gospel, which is, do we believe that anybody's beyond redemption? And that's what I really came to find is that, you know, there's lots of scriptures we can argue in different ways, and that's why I wrote a book on it, you know, but I think that at the end of the day, one of the questions is, doesn't Jesus and our belief that Jesus came, you know, not for the healthy, but for the sick, you know, not for the righteous, but for the sinners, that where sin abounds, grace abounds, that mercy triumphs over judgment. These things that we say, like, how does that inform how we think about capital punishment?
So we're not in any way saying that horrendous things have not occurred. Horrendous things have occurred.
Yeah.
Horrific things have occurred. Unimaginable things have occurred. The question is, and Shane's helped me with this, the question is, how would Jesus have us respond to the horror?
Yeah.
How would he have us respond to the horror?
Yeah, that's exactly the right question. And you know, because, I mean, evil is real. We see that, you know, in Las Vegas, we see it in Manhattan, we see it, you know, all over the world, like Dylan Roof, you know, we see so much violence and going all the way back to Cain and Abel, you know, and I think that the question is, like, how does Jesus inform how we respond to that? And you know, one of the victims said to me, we hear, you know, forgive and forget. And she said, I came to realize I needed to forgive and remember because the power of forgiveness is actually remembering what was done wrong. So it's not at all forgetting that, but it's staring that in the face and saying, for instance, with the death penalty, murder is wrong. So why would I want to try to have someone else killed to show that killing was wrong? It actually mirrors the very thing we're trying to heal the world of, you know, and so, yeah, I think evil should have consequences. And to be anti-death penalty is not to be anti-victim or anti-justice, you know, but to say that we can do better than killing to show that killing is wrong. And Desmond Tutu, you know, he says that the love of God is big enough to set both the oppressed and the oppressors free. Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful line, but to think that God is healing people who have been victims, but God is also healing people who have been victimizers and who have done terrible things. The United Methodists have a good statement on it. They say that the death, when we argue for the death penalty, it undermines the possibilities of God's redemptive work through Christ. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're holding out hope for, you know, and if we believe that murderers are beyond redemption, we got some problems with the scripture, you know. Moses killed a man, and David killed Uriah, you know. Bathsheba, Saul of Tarsus, you know, oversaw the execution of Stephen in the book of Acts. So the Bible would be a lot shorter without grace.
I think that's a good point.
Chris, what was this like for you to go and enter into this world?
Well, I was, it sounds strange, probably. I was very excited to go. Here's why. You know this, Nate, about 2.5 years ago, just as I was coming into heading on Renovari and being part of the Renovari team and so on, I felt like the Lord said, when I woke up one morning, well, what about the prison system? Mm-hmm. And then I thought, well, that must mean in some way that Renovari is supposed to be involved helping incarcerated people. But then as I investigated that, I found out there's lots of things that Christian folks are doing in the prisons. It's really hard to get into the prisons. Renovari's got all of, 4.5 people working full time. we were already kind of maxed out. So it was always in my mind and in my heart, but up on the shelf a little bit. Mm-hmm. Just kind of in a holding pattern. Mm-hmm. And then Shane and I were, and I had told Shane about this a while back, and so caught his interest a little bit, I think. And then we were at Chili's, having lunch together. And that's when he told me about going down to Nashville and what he was doing there and so on and so forth. And he could tell by my expression that I was begging. Can I go? Can I go? And it just worked out. He was speaking down at Belmont University, and it all worked out. And so my experience was one of excitement about being able to move into a learning space that I had not been in a lot. There were a few instances where I had been in a prison situation, because of it, with my own broader family and so on. But I'd never been on death row. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't feel nervous because I felt like that's what where the Lord wanted me to be. I felt like just keep quiet and listen and observe. Mm-hmm. And talk if that's what's going to happen. Just keep quiet, listen, observe, and so on. And so I just moved into that new learning space that I indelibly marked in my memory as doors were opening and closing and opening and closing and opening and closing and experiencing what folks there who either work there, for example, the prison guards or who are incarcerated, at what they probably are experiencing day in and day out. I just felt like I was supposed to be open and responsive to my new environment. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And didn't know what to expect. Hmm. And so then we walked finally through the last set of doors after walking by where some of the executions take place and so on, just walked into a room. It was a circular room with cubicles and cells and so on. And there were 5 or 6 guys there. And so I thought, and they had white T-shirts on and had said with a number. And then they had sweatpants on that said on the black line, Tennessee Department of Corrections. And there these folks were I'd never met before. And I walked in not knowing what to expect. And suddenly hugs. Hugs. And one of them saying, we're so happy you're here. Mm. We're so happy. And then saying, praise God. Praise God. We're so happy you're here. So and then we had plastic chairs in a circle. And I sat down and I think it was almost 3 hours. We just talked. We just talked. Just talked. And at the end of our time together, one of these guys walked over with a spiral notebook, and he said, Chris, all I do here is pray. Mm-hmm. And they don't have a lot to do. All I do here is pray. And I have he showed me his spiral notebook, and he had names in it. And he said, I want to pray for you. What can I pray for you about? And I said, well, my wife for a stretch was having health problems. So I said, well, you can pray for Debbie. And he looked at me and he said, I am going to be praying for Debbie.
Wow.
And then the other guy next to me heard what was going on, and he said, I'm going to be praying for Debbie too. And so I don't want to sentimentalize this or make it any less than it is in terms of horrific things that have happened, victims who suffered. But God was also present there. It's like God was saying, this is my space.
And one of the guys that we met with says, we don't call it death row, we call it life row, because life is everywhere.
It's a piece of God's redemption.
Kingdom
come in this round.
Why would we think that there are spaces where God's not present and active and working?
I think you're right in saying, you know, you don't want to sentimentalize this either, because we walk by the chamber where they kill people, you know, like where the executions happen. We walked right by it. You know, I pray over that space every time we go there, that it would not ever happen again, you know, in that space. And we know that we weren't seeing all that facility either. There's a you know, psychological ward, there's a solitary, you know, confinement area. There's some really, really, and even the stories that we were hearing about people's medical treatment and people's lifespan is actually decreased when they are spending life in prison. So they actually change the life expectancy as they determine budgets and things like that. They know people are going to die younger than if they were not living in prison, and the health access is terrible and things like that. So all those things were real. And I think even as we think about the prison buildup and things like that, there's a lot that we're praying for, you know, as we are there. But I mean, the humanity and the joy and the resilience, I think, of every time I go, I feel the Spirit of God there. I learn things. I feel the love and, you know, embrace of these guys that many people would just think only monsters are there. And that's just not true.
Mm-hmm. Shane, I'm curious, in your work with these folks and with the issue at large, what have you learned about God and yourself through these experiences?
I've certainly, first of all, I spent a lot of my life in favor of the death penalty, you know? So I think, you know, even just rethinking how I think about justice, the idea in scripture that righteousness and justice are partners, you know, that they're married together, and that God's justice isn't just about what did someone do wrong and what do they deserve, but it's actually about asking questions like what harm was done and how can we really heal the wounds of that harm, that, you know, many of us talk about restorative justice. Mm-hmm. And I've come to find that a lot of these men who have been through so much and some who have done great harm, their wounds are able to help heal. And many of them have been wounded in their life. And, you know, Henry Nouwen talks a lot about how we are wounded healers, you know, that we're conditioned to think that our bumps and bruises are a liability to be ashamed of, but they're actually our credentials, you know. And those who have been wounded often are make incredible healers in the world. And so many of these men know the power of grace and forgiveness because they felt it firsthand, you know? That's, you know, it's two of the guys that we were with, one of them got ordained, in prison. And he is kind of a pastor inside of Unit 2, there. So, but then I think, you know, it's very possible that he could be executed. And that, you know, that it just kind of constantly hits you in the face. And that's why I think the personalism is what's so important, you know, is because we talk about these issues, but we don't always remember the names and faces. And it's things like in my Bible here, I carry one of the guys I used to visit there with, Chris. He wasn't there this time because he's not on death row anymore. And he wrote me this little card that says, as I was sealing up my letter, I was moved off death row after 30 years. And I just walked on grass a few seconds ago for the first time in 30 years. And he talks about what it's like to walk on grass for the first time in 3 decades. And so I think that's what we're talking about, you know, is what does God's real restorative justice look like? And what are we doing to people through a system that in many ways doesn't leave much space for redemption.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's helpful. What would you say for people who are listening who would like to be involved, care about some of these issues? What can they do?
Well, a couple of ways to make this personal is I have some friends that have a podcast with folks who are living on death row. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty complicated, as you imagine, but they basically call into a line and record some of their stories and writing and prayer requests and things like that. And it's called Lifelines. Okay. And so folks can find that. This is not the men in Tennessee, but it's folks in other facilities that are part of that. But it's a way to, like, you know people and hear their stories. I think folks can read some of these stories. A lot of these folks have written books about the power of forgiveness and their faith. And folks can also go to my website. We have a website, executinggrace.com. That's the name of my book on the death penalty and forgiveness. And it's executinggrace.com. And on there, you can find a whole bunch of different groups like the one I mentioned with murder victims, family members and others that are have been directly affected by this. A lot of statistics and things like that, too. And I think, you know, the important thing is to figure out ways that you can do some of this yourself. You know, there's a lot of really great groups that connect through, you know, pen pals or writing back and forth with folks in prison, or you can connect up with a group that's already visiting near you. And they're almost everywhere I go, there are churches and people that are able to go in and visit folks, because, you know, at the end of the day, we're going to come before God. And Jesus is one of the things we're going to be asked is, when I was in prison, did you visit me? Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, God's not saying to folks in prison, find the church. You know, God's saying to us, I think, go into the world, go into the prisons. So let's find ways to do that. And it does take a little work, you know, an incentive to do it. But I mean, it kind of, you got to be a little bit ambitious to get in there. But yeah. And, you know, I think we're excited to be talking with you all at Renovari about ways that we can support these men in Tennessee and other folks around the country that may want books and spiritual resources, and that who also, in fact, may be a spiritual resource and may have a lot of wisdom and time to be praying for folks and things that they're learning that would be really beneficial for all of us, you know, because like Chris said, a lot of these men are spending a whole lot of time reading and thinking and praying. And some of these original penitentiaries were built like the monasteries, because they were, and the cells were modeled after the old monasteries. And even the word penitentiary shares the repentance. You know, it was meant to be a place of restoration and to rethink how we think and live. And it was, I think, never meant to be quite the travesty of mass incarceration that we have right now, that often just becomes a warehouse for people for the rest of their lives. So I think we can try to make some of those changes. And I'm optimistic on the death penalty. Millennials in particular, millennial Christians were asked, are you for or against the death penalty? And 80% of them said we're against the death penalty. Wow. And it's because we just can't reconcile it with our faith. Even Americans as a whole, when they were polled, are overwhelmingly standing against the death penalty and towards alternatives to it. They asked folks, would Jesus be in, I think it was Pew that asked people, would Jesus be in favor of the death penalty? And 95% of Americans said no. They just said, we got to convince the Christians to take him seriously.
That's good. Chris, you have some ideas for ways people in the Renovari community can be helpful?
Sure. So folks, if you're interested in sending books, the way to send those books would be to send them to Renovari. And then as an organization, it's easier to get materials into folks than simply individuals on the outside of a prison individually trying to do so. So I wanted to encourage you, either if you want to write or if you'd like to give books, because folks there really look forward to receiving something to read, send it to the Renovari office and send it to Renovari, P.O. Box 370090. Let me say that again for you. It's a long number. P.O. Box 370090. And that would be in Denver, Colorado, 80237. That's, again, the address, Denver, Colorado, 80237. And on whatever it is that you send, just write attention, Joan Scully, S-K-U-L-L-E-Y, Joan Scully. She doesn't know that I'm doing this to her, but she'll be glad. All right?
That's good. And again, the website, Shane, executinggrace.com, and then the podcast, yeah. Lifeline? Lifelines, yes.
Yeah, Lifelines. Awesome. Yeah.
Cool.
Hey, this has been great. We'll have to have another conversation about old new monasticism next time or something.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Ooh, that would
that'd
be
good. Fun.
We love you guys. I've got to hop off, but I'm so grateful for both of you, and we love, obviously, all the work at Renovari, so we'll keep looking for ways we can team up.
Sounds good. Okay. Thanks, guys. Awesome, this was great.
Talk to you soon, Chris. Okay.
See ya.
Love y'all. Bye.
Well, there you have it. You might remember a while back I did a podcast with Josh Banner on his work in the prisons. I just heard today a number of you've reached out to help him in his work. Thank you. What a wonderful community we have here. Renovare in prisons. Interesting. If you'd like to learn more about Shane's work with The Simple Way, you can visit their website at simpleway.org. You can also check out Shane's page, shaneclaiborne.org. Our offices are closed this week, celebrating American Thanksgiving, so we won't have a release next Monday. But have a wonderful holiday, and may the powerful practice of giving thanks find you well.